Finish presents Doctor Who Short Trips, Curse of the Few, by Alice Cavender, read by Sheridan Smith. A blue police box hovered untenably in the damp air above England's southwest peninsula. It flickered through months, like a dealer riffling a pack of cards, the landscape changing below it, clouds above it. It was little wonder it was hesitant to land there. A malaise gripped the nation below, as an international spat over the price of crude oil drove Britain to desperate measures. As the furnaces were cranked up and their appetite for coal grew, a struggle between the state and its workers ensued. So the blue box now sped through miners on picket lines, stamping their feet to keep warm, car drivers illicitly stashing cans of petrol in their garages, and families huddling together round their fireplaces, their excited children lighting candles and gleefully playing with the hot wax. Even adults were reading by torchlight under the covers, getting out of bed periodically to flick the light switch, often to no avail. An imposed state of emergency gave way to hastily prepared hustings. But just before the election result could be announced, the blue box paused, reversed a little way back through the continuum, settled on a particularly grim day in February, and materialised onto a frost-covered allotment, where it looked not entirely out of place alongside a variety of sheds. The phone rang harshly and insistently in the hall of the Elms Rest Home. A television news programme was blaring in the next room, reporting on the latest round of ailing negotiations between the unions and the Westminster bureaucrats. "It's your boyfriend, Lucy. Quite posh, isn't he?" said a smiley young man holding out the phone. Lucy wiped her hands on her apron, took the heavy receiver and lifted it to her ear. "Oh, ignore Matt, he's only assistant manager," she said, digging him in the ribs as he departed. "So, where in the universe have you been for 2 weeks?" she demanded.
"That's a very ungrateful attitude, Lucy," replied the doctor. "I'm endeavouring to give you an authentic experience of the infamous 3-day week."
"Well, that's one cosy myth busted then," interrupted Lucy, "as I'm grafting 6 days a week and half the power cuts are unscheduled."
"You English are usually so stoic under rationing,"
replied the doctor, the line crackling viciously.
"Besides, I'm still having trouble with the tracker, so I don't know when else to put you,"
he conceded. "Well, have you tried turning it on and off again?" said Lucy, hugging her elbows in the draughty hallway.
"Funnily enough, I have,"
he replied.
"Look, the resonance trace I'm picking up is near where you are. Temporally speaking, circuit testing shows no fault. But there still seems to be more dropping out than dropping in."
"Well, could you bleeding well drop in then and get me out of here? There's nothing doing," huffed Lucy.
"Hold on,"
said the doctor playfully.
"What was it you said last week? The residents are a lovely bunch of inspiring war heroes and survivors?"
"Yeah," replied Lucy. "But there's only so much semolina and Bruce Forsyth a girl can stand. Oh, and the central heating's knackered again, so bring your sonic spanner. Oh, the 70s are rubbish." She was about to hang up when the hall light went out and the sound of the too loud television thankfully died. "Doctor, the power's off again."
"Yes, but the trace is back,"
the doctor cried. On the pretext of checking on the residents, Lucy made a quick sweep of their rooms. All her charges were in the lounge, bar 73-year-old Cecile Chalmers, who was sat wrapped in a shawl in her armchair, definitely not sitting comfortably. Although disease was robbing her of her sight, Cecile had pin-sharp hearing. However, she didn't notice Lucy approaching. She was currently sat bolt upright, seemingly engaged in a debate with herself. "Half the conversation must be in her head," thought Lucy, due to the pauses after which Cecile replied, Mon chéri, we all knew what we were signing up for. I know my duty. There's no use begging. Lucy called her name and put her hand over Cécile's, and gasped as for an instant, she saw a young man in a mud-spattered overcoat. He was kneeling in front of Cécile, so close that she could smell tobacco and engine grease and see the sweat on his brow. His fear paralysed her. The lights came back on, banishing the figure.
"Oh, is that Lucy?"
asked Cécile, briskly wiping away a tear.
"Be a darling and fetch my compact. I'm late for the card game."
Cécile was using her firmest tone, so, on automatic pilot, Lucy located the powder compact among the lotions on the dresser and gently applied foundation to Cécile's nose, marvelling at how the woman had regained her composure while her own hands were trembling. She realised with a start that Matt was standing in the doorway. He looked shaken, more than he should do over a simple power outage. He took Cécile's arm and gently led her off to the lounge. Lucy used the back office phone to update the doctor, composed herself, and returned to the lounge. Of the residents, those not sitting around the card table had arranged themselves in armchairs in front of the unlit coal effect gas fire. A patient old boy stuffed baccy into the bowl of his pipe and winked at Lucy. She crouched in front of the fire with its glowing light bulb innards and quickly turned the control knob to no effect.
"Hold it in longer before you click," the man instructed in his faded Polish accent, pointing the pipe stem at the fire.
"She'll gas a lot of us,"
a voice piped up from the back of the room.
"Don't let any of the paraffin either. Here's one for you, Lucy. What's half a crown minus 2 and 6?
"Oh, leave her be. Tain't her fault. She's simple,"
said another voice kindly. Lucy rolled her eyes, held the knob in, counted to 3, and with a final twist, the gas fire burst into life, almost taking off her eyebrows. She stood, hands on hips.
"You lot had better get with the decimal, because it's here to stay," she declared.
"What else, Madame Nostradamus?"
the crowd teased, now on their favourite Lucy game. "The Berlin Wall falls," she said to laughter.
"And what of my country?" asked the pipe smoker.
"Becomes a democracy and joins the European Union," Lucy recalled. "Bloke with a big bushy moustache saves the day."
The pipe smoker leaned forward and gripped her hand in both of his.
"God bless your heart, Miss Lucy. We can but hope."
"And the Soviet Union?" asked Cécile coolly, peering through her magnifying glass at her hand of cards.
"That collapses too, thanks to Gorbachev,"
asserted Lucy before biting her lip and muttering, "Oh, why am I still talking?" The magnifying glass wavered for a moment over the bays. Cécile played her ace with a satisfied grunt. Lucy was fetching in the milk when the doctor bounded up the steps to the front door.
"Ugh, ruddy blue tits, been at these again. I mean, what is the point of foil tops?"
she said, waving an offending milk bottle at the doctor, who grinned.
"You took your time. Show us your black bag."
He held a leather medical bag aloft.
"I fear I may be too late," he said with mock seriousness. "You appear to have gone native." "Now where's the patient?"
Lucy hefted the milk crate and shoved the door open with her foot.
"She's straight through, door at the end on the left. I can't stop. If they don't have their 11s in front of them by the last strike of the clock, they'll be tutting as you've never heard the like of. Oh, and doctor, just get me out of here before I turn into me mum."
"Love the pinny," he retorted, heading up the corridor. The doctor peered through the gap of the slightly ajar bedroom door at the elderly woman sat quietly in her armchair. Her eyes were closed, but her hair, with its tightly pinned neat grey bun and her straight back, spoke of a lifetime's deportment. Her elegance was only slightly faded.
"Come,"
she said, before he raised his hand to knock.
"Good afternoon, Miss Cécile, I'm the doctor," he said with a slight bow.
She gestured at a wooden chair, which he placed near her and sat.
Do have a seat. You're not my usual doctor, she observed.
No, I'm a locum. I only do locums.
Lucy tells me you've had a funny turn, he inquired. She casually smoothed the shawl across her knees and shrugged slightly.
I was momentarily addled. That is all. I am 72.
The doctor's gaze fell on a framed photograph sat on the dresser. It was of a much younger Cecile.
Well, that's interesting, he continued. Lucy doesn't find you to be addled at all. She described you as having a little ethereal trouble. Old beaux making a belated appearance, perhaps? About 40 years too late?
Are you a doctor of psychiatry? Cecile responded, lifting her eyebrows but retaining her poise.
Actually more a doctor of applied history. And you, in fact, are also not entirely who you purport to be. I.e., you are not only Cecile Chalmers, but also Helene Dubois, a.k.a. the Karate Kitten, a British agent whose work in France during the Second World War is now legend.
The Karate Kitten? She scoffed, shaking her head.
I fear you've spent too many afternoons at the pictures.
The doctor persisted. You gathered critical intelligence on the German High Command, which had a direct impact on the planning of the D-Day landings. I've read your autobiography. I'm a big fan. Especially the very short chapter on occult items which the Germans believed would help them win the war.
What preposterous drivel, said Cecile dismissively. Even if I were the woman you mention, what makes you think I would do something so traitorous as to write a book about national defence? It is bad enough that that fool from Codebreaking is publishing about Bletchley Park. Have people no regard for the Official Secrets Act these days?
Ah, stupid doctor, he said, tapping his knee. It's 1974. You haven't written it yet. My humble apologies. That's the trouble with time travel, you see. But you will write it, because both you and the Bletchley Park Chroniclers come to feel compelled to speak the truth in order to combat the nation's post-war complacency. That, and of course because the Americans constantly taking all the credit for winning the war, is so very vexatious. Cecile was listening carefully, and the doctor noted she was not challenging his mention of time travel and so continued.
What isn't in the book, you haven't yet written, is any mention of your recent vision, which I suspect means it relates to something too dangerous to be revealed to the general public, which is exactly why you need a specialist doctor, one with centuries of experience in the field.
In the field? She inquired. He watched her poker face.
My speciality is, shall we say, putting the intergalactic genie back in the bottle.
She inclined her head, waiting for more. He sat back in his chair and tried a different tack.
I visited Paris during the war. It was abysmal. We couldn't get a cup of tea for a start.
Cecile smiled at this, and the doctor shifted to the edge of his chair and, leaning close to her ear, whispered, What are you keeping from the world, Cecile? Cecile shook her head.
You, and I assume your associate Lucy, seem to think you know a thing or two.
I doubt it's a coincidence you both arrived here within days of one another.
Such poor intelligence you must have, mistaking me for an agent. I spent the war in London pushing paper. I think you have been misdirected.
She leaned towards the doctor and lowered her voice to parody him with a mock whisper. You seem to be going through a lot of trouble to find your woman. For whom do you work? The Soviets.
The doctor smiled. You're very good at this routine, Cecile, and we could spend all day dancing around the danger while someone nearby gets hurt.
I think something very dangerous is stirring up your unconscious. You see, I've been tracking a metal alloy, and although I don't know what form it takes, my detection equipment puts it in the vicinity. If I can bring your past back to you, imagine what it could do to someone with less self-control.
Lucy exited the kitchen door to the freezing back alley. She was about to dump the milk crate onto the fire escape when she caught sight of Matt through the basement window below, sitting with his back to her. He was looking intently at a metallic pebble, which he slowly turned over and over in his hands, which shook slightly. He appeared mesmerised by it. She retreated, but the rattling glass bottles gave her away. He turned to stare at her, his usual good-humoured expression ruined by anger. And as he stood abruptly to pull the curtain across, also shame, she thought. Watching the curtain, she backed into the kitchen, wishing they weren't the only staff on duty, and headed straight for Cecile's room. Lucy burst into the room, unapologetically. "Doctor, it's Matt. He's got a little shiny gizmo," she blurted, making the shape of it with one hand. "And he's right-mithered." Cecile sighed at this news and held up her hand to silence Lucy. After a moment's thought, she spoke quietly, and for the first time Lucy noticed just a hint of vulnerability. "That dear boy, he must not be harmed on my account. How could he be involved? Someone is using him." Lucy's heart tore a little as she watched the woman used to issuing commands have to climb down and ask for their help. "Doctor, in truth, the visions have been going on for a few weeks now. Each time the power goes off, I see former comrades clear as day in front of me. In a war, there are impossible decisions that you just have to live with. Now my regrets talk back to me." "Ah," the doctor reacted. "Could it be... Yes, I think the alloy is magnetic. Therefore, its performance is impaired by electrical interference, which is why the detector could not instruct me when to land." "So it works when the lecky's off?" asked Lucy. "Exactly," said the doctor, getting up to pace the room. "You see, I only know of the legend of the metal, not the exact science. If I'm right, this very rare alloy originates from the Mandalis galaxy. The tales tell of its ability to subtly influence people's minds. A chieftain discovered its properties and constructed an experimental control device. He was naive, and it brought out the despot in him. He enslaved his people, and a devastating interplanetary war resulted from the unleashing of his narcissism." "He sounds like a barrel of laughs," said Lucy. "Must put Mandalis on my bucket list." "History repeating itself," murmured Cecile. The doctor sat down again. Cecile looked tired suddenly. "In Paris, the German state police, some of whom thought themselves gods, got their hands on an artifact of unknown, possibly extraterrestrial origin, which they reported allowed them to direct others. It crushed the rational mind and worked on the unconscious, thereby increasing suggestibility." "Sounds just like the Mandalis alloy," said Lucy. "The effect was known as defugue," continued Cecile. "The Germans were convinced that the device was destined to be wielded by their Führer. We, the British agents, with the help of French resistance comrades, were hoping to intercept a copy of the report on the device before it reached the German High Command. However, one of their lieutenants deserted, taking the report and the device with him. We can only guess at why Lieutenant Lehmann did this." The lamp on the dresser flickered for a moment and stayed on. "The electrical substation isn't coping well with the frequent shutdowns," said the doctor. "Each time the power goes off, the device's influence may grow stronger. If Matt has the device, then we must get it from him so that I can destroy it." "He was fuming. I don't think he's just going to donate it for the greater good," said Lucy. "Actually, it is not entirely his decision," said Cecile, vigour returning to her face. "My ghost friend from the Resistance keeps urging me to confess the whereabouts of the device. However, all these years, I have only known the location of one half of it." She reached into her chair and pressed her call bell before Lucy could stop her. Lucy turned to see Matt's frame blocking the doorway. He avoided eye contact with her. "Is she well, Doctor?" he asked anxiously. The doctor looked at Cecile. Cecile? Matt said, his voice wavering. Cecile beckoned him to stand in front of her. And even with him towering over her, she once again exuded an air of command. What have you done, Matthew? These communists say you have brought a dangerous thing into our home. Matt shifted uneasily, looking the doctor up and down. This comrade of Lucy's has classified knowledge of your situation, she bluffed. Time to put your cards on the table. The doctor and Lucy held their breath as the two friends stared at one another. Matt cracked first. Cecile, if you could just see me properly, you would see my father. My real name is Mathieu Ricard. Cecile blanched, looked down, and then reached out to take his hands. He knelt in front of her. It is no accident that you are here, is it? Cecile asked the man gently. He shook his head. In the war during missions, I often had to rely solely on my own initiative. One such mission I undertook was to monitor a potentially dangerous device which the Germans had procured. Once I realised Lieutenant Lehmann had disobeyed orders and taken the device, I didn't have time to consult the chain of command. I had the dirt on all the officers in Lehmann's division, so I checked at the apartment of his girlfriend, Mademoiselle Ricard. However, they were both gone. I knew the back routes out of her arrondissement better than he, and I intercepted him as he tried to flee the city. Cecile touched Matt's shoulder tenderly as she continued. You must understand, Mathieu, how high the stakes were. Lehmann was a top-notch boxer, and I had to use karate to subdue him. I tried to make a deal with him, but he wouldn't surrender the device at any price, and I had to kill him. I felt worse when I discovered it was a fruitless sacrifice, that he was carrying only half of the device. Part of me hoped it wasn't true, that it wasn't you at the end. I came here to ask you, and then I couldn't, said a tearful Matt. I want to know, did you know of my mother's situation? I did not know she was with the child. And she did a good job of getting below the radar, said Cecile gently. We never settled until we came to England, Matt continued. My mother was seen as a collaborator. Our lives were hard, and as soon as I was old enough, she told me about Lehmann and this. He put his hand in his pocket and brought out the device. He couldn't take his eyes off it as he spoke. I've never known a normal life. At least not until I came here. The kindness I've been shown this past year was unknown to me before. He closed his hand around it and with effort pocketed it. Cecile, you can imagine the people I've had to deal with to get information on you. He shuddered. So now tell me, I have been through your room 100 times and the other half is not here. So after all these years of waiting, I must know, did you give your half to the authorities? No, Matthew, she replied. It was too dangerous for any government to possess. I reported it missing and burned the file. After a cursory flicker, the lamp went off once more. Matt jumped back from Cecile and held his forehead. No, 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 he cried. What is it? Describe it, ordered the doctor, standing. She's my friend and she murdered my father. I want to punish her, to crush the life out of her. I want to crush the life out of her, Matt shouted angrily, ramming his knuckles into his forehead. Lucy moved to stand between him and the former agent. You have your device, Matt. The other must be nearby, amplifying it, explained the doctor calmly. I can help. I can give you both closure, but you have to trust me and give me both devices. He looked from the young man to the old woman and back again. Cecile, I don't know what to do, moaned Matt. I love you, but I hate you. I don't know myself anymore. Who am I? I should have got here sooner, the doctor whispered to Lucy. To his obvious astonishment, Lucy unleashed a full-force glare. You were too busy tinkering with your girlfriend's circuits to come back at the agreed time,
Something you got previous on, Mr. Cosmic Joyrider. Bleeding well, trying to leave me on a dust-covered hovel of a planet. Like that's okay to do to someone. How bleeding dare you?
The doctor held up his hands.
After 2 weeks stuck here, how did I even know you were coming back?
She drew breath while the doctor started to massage his temples.
Excuse me, said Matt dazedly, still holding his head.
Existential crisis over here. You're French. You'll be fine,
snapped the doctor. His attention was caught by a gaggle of residents slowly but purposefully advancing down the corridor towards them, wearing grim expressions.
It's spreading, he said, and darted past Lucy and Matt to slam and lock the door.
Matt was crouched, digging his nails into his own arms, apparently trying to master his feelings. He looked at Cecile like a tiger looks at their prey.
Did you enjoy your work? Or the killing? How did that feel, Cecile?
He spat. Lucy, ignoring Matt, looked about to launch into another tirade herself.
The doctor cut her off. Lucy, is this really the time?
She frowned as he continued.
It's the device. Matt's abandonment and anxiety is why we've got a zombie dad's army approaching and why you're losing what little filter you had between your brain and your vocal cords.
The door handle rattled ominously. The doctor advanced on Cecile, who had sat with her head in her hands, and knelt next to her.
Cecile, war makes for strange bedfellows. Believe me, we are on the same side, and we do need to stop this harm from spreading out of the home. Don't you think the country's got enough of a struggle on its hands without this getting out?
The crouching Matt was reaching out and trying to pull the doctor away from Cecile. Lucy rallied and managed to break his hold and drag Matt round on his knees to face her. She gripped his shoulders.
Look, I know you. You're a nice man. You're a confused man whose dad was never there to set you an example. But you know what? Maybe your dad was trying to do the right thing. And maybe you can now too. Maybe you can do him proud.
She rolled her eyes.
And for goodness sake, Matt, you can't let a psychic bleeding fridge magnet get the better of you.
Matt gave her a crooked grin and a bit of his spirit returned to his now bloodshot eyes.
And how do I know you don't just want it for yourselves?
Mathieu, mon chéri, said Cecile quietly. I have made a lot of deals in my time, and you'll have to trust my gut feeling on this one. But in case I'm wrong, Lucy stays here as insurance. You are to go with the doctor, but first, you must take my half of the device from the dressing table.
All but Cecile gathered round the little table, studying the glass pots and bottles, some very old, most with French names etched on them. The intricate work on the silver stoppers was stunning, but not otherworldly.
But I've checked those, said Lucy, bewildered.
Oh, I see, said the doctor gleefully. You clever old thing. The genie is already in the bottle.
He gently picked up a slender glass Roger Egalet perfume bottle and swirled its orange-hued contents.
Hidden in plain view, sighed Matt.
Aqua regia, continued the doctor. It's what the Nobel Prize winners used to hide their gold medals in to stop them being taken from them during the war. The device is dissolved in acids, nitric and hydrochloric, to be specific.
It's genius. How is it that it is still functioning as a device?
Matt took his half from his pocket and held it up to the bottle. All four of them groaned at the surge in unpleasant feelings and exchanged looks as they heard the faint voice of Cecile's dead comrade pleading.
Hélène! Help me! Hélène!
The residents started to hammer hard on the door. The doctor sighed. Shame we'll never know how this works, but it's far too dangerous to delay its demise, he said, pocketing the bottle and flinging open the sash window. He and Matt went through and were soon out of sight, heading for the allotment. Lucy stood at the window watching.
Insurance, she said to the old woman. Have you really still got some ninja mojo going on?
Cecile smiled and neatly folded her hands into her lap before replying,
It is best that you don't find out, ma chérie.
When the doctor and Matt returned, it was through the front door. Night was falling and the residents were once again sitting in the lounge, looking slightly dishevelled and bewildered. Someone had lit some paraffin lamps and now, bathed in their hazy yellow light, the doctor thought the residents looked like characters from a 19th century oil painting. The Polish man absent-mindedly sucked on his unlit pipe as the doctor and Matt passed by. A wary Lucy unlocked the bedroom door, and Matt stood once more before Cecile, silent, his head bowed. "I vaporised them both. They're gone for good," said the doctor. "Yes, I can feel that. My mind is more spacious somehow. It feels like a cathedral now. To think that thing had such a hold over me for all those years. We owe you our thanks, Lucy, Doctor," said Cecile calmly. "My gut feeling was right, it seems. However, it also tells me that you are exactly the kind of comrades who should be put on the next train out of town."
"Oh, believe me, I'm on it," said Lucy.
"Miss Chalmers, it's been an honour," said the doctor, bowing more deeply this time.
"And you, Lucy," said Cecile. "You have little aptitude for covert operations, at least in this century. However, I can see you would not let a dangerous artefact fall into the wrong hands. So look after this one." She pointed in the doctor's direction, before standing and taking Matt's arm. She led him up the corridor. "Secrets are a terrible strain on the constitution, Macho. You will feel better presently."
As the doctor and Lucy reached the front door, they saw Cecile settle herself back at the lounge table. Ever the consummate professional, she resumed her game of cards as if nothing had happened. Lucy and the doctor walked briskly in the chill air the short distance to the TARDIS. Candlelight flickered in the windows of the houses. The surrounding street lamps were still off. They paused to step carefully round rain puddles on the allotment, which was lit only by the moon.
"Goodbye, 70s, Lucy said without regret. Doctor, look, about me tearing a strip off you earlier," she ventured, hugging her arms across her chest. He looked vague and put his hands in his pockets. "I don't recall that, what with all the people banging on the door. It was a touch chaotic in there. Anything you wish to revisit?"
No. Move along, nothing to see," she said breezily,
as he put his TARDIS key in the lock.
"Au contraire," he grinned. "There's the universe to see." And he held open the door for her. "After you, Lucy Miller."